This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, joined by my colleagues Bill Roggio and Tom Joslin, both senior fellows at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, keeping the Long War Journal, the story of this vast canvas, and the jihadists over it from the Hindu Kush to the Mediterranean and on to Africa and on to South America. But Afghanistan is the story. So I begin with headlines in these last days out of Afghanistan. President Ghani, after 3 days of talks with the Taliban, he indicates that the solution is in Pakistan. It's in Pakistan's hands, says Mr. Ghani. Europe needs to get Pakistan on board with the settlement. At the same time, the Hazaras, who are a minority in Afghanistan, are pleading with outside authority, the U.S., Europe, whoever will listen, that when and if the U.S. and its allies withdraw from Afghanistan, they are exposed to the violence of the Taliban, as witnessed recently by the attack on the school in Kabul. We also have a three-day ceasefire ending in Afghanistan with violent attacks, all claimed by the Islamic State, which is a complication that is a bridge too far for the negotiators in Kabul right now. But the attacks are across the country. However, there's said to be very heavy fighting in Helmand province. I go immediately to Bill Roggio because he has posted, and I recommend to you all watching Afghanistan, a map of Afghanistan and the provinces that are either in Taliban control or under stress because of the Taliban. And it very much looks like a boa constrictor has wrapped itself around Kabul in central Afghanistan and is squeezing it, not very slowly anymore. Bill, a very good evening to you. The Taliban control is accelerating, but as you've made very clear these last weeks of reporting, this is not a new offensive. This is business as usual. Where are you watching, Bill, to see the Taliban's most recent moves against the Afghan National Army? Good evening to you, Bill.
Good evening, John. And before I get to that, I'm just going to really quickly mention. So the Taliban, when I started this in 2014, we were able to determine a small number of districts controlled and contested. By the time we were able to really get the data normalized or get it under control around 2017-18, the Taliban, in January 2018, the Taliban controlled, according to my estimations, about 45 of the 407 districts, about 11% of them, and another 29%, that's 117 districts, were contested. Today, that's 87 districts controlled and 214 contested. So those numbers have doubled. And that's happened over just incremental Taliban gains over time have just accumulated into 70% of the country contested or controlled. You're right. I mean, it looks like a snake gripping its prey. That's what the Taliban is absolutely doing. Of course, the place that I'm watching right now is the South. The Taliban is poised to take control of the South once the U.S. leaves. The U.S. just evacuated Kandahar airfield. So the U.S. is going to be hard pressed to launch operations to stop the Taliban from overrunning the provincial capitals, Lashkar Gah and Helmand, Kandahar City and Kandahar, Ghazni. I think they're all very ripe to fall to the Taliban. But that's not the only area. When you look at the map, the Taliban's controlled and contested areas in the north is something that should really worry the Afghan government. Because if the Afghan government at some point is going to have to consolidate its presence in Afghanistan and decide where it wants to make a stand. And it has a better chance of making a stand in the center and the north, back to the days of the old Northern Alliance, than it does in the heavily pashtun areas of the south. But the problem is that the Taliban have appealed to Tajik and Uzbek, and even in some isolated case, some Hazara groups. And that's why they've extended their control in the north. And that's the Taliban have sort of co-opted these jihadist groups and made their jihad appealing to these groups. And that's what we're seeing in the north. So yeah, I'm looking at the south, north, and of course, always the east. The Taliban is lurking there. What I think, and I'm working on an article on this that hopefully I'll have up this week, is that, I think the Taliban is basically the premises of their offensive. They're going to try and take control of the south, or probably in conjunction with the east, and then make a press for Kabul. They already have control in contested areas in Wardak and Lohar provinces. That's another key area we should all be keeping an eye on. These are two provinces that are right outside Kabul, and the Taliban controls and contests more than half of, actually it's like 75% of the districts in both of those provinces. So they're poised to make an attack on Kabul if they could secure the south and the east in short order.
And a detail, Bill, when you say contested, what does that mean about the Afghan National Army? Does that mean it still has posts in the region or counterattacks or launches operations? What is contested?
Yeah, contested could mean, some in a lot of these districts, the government only controls the district center. Think of it as the county seat here in the United States, but all of the areas surrounding are under the control of the Taliban. Sometimes a contested district could be like the Taliban controls half the villages. Sometimes these districts flip hands so many times that I consider them districts like that, just to pretty much to be Taliban controlled because the Afghan government cannot control those areas. And sometimes just the attack, while the government might control district centers and the district center and large areas, the Taliban presence is just strong enough. The violence is so high that it's just not government controlled at all.
Tom, go ahead.
Just one more point. Sometimes the most peaceful areas in Afghanistan are the ones that are fully under Taliban control.
Fully under Taliban control, and that is logical given where they're headed, and that leads to my turning to Tom, because he's posted a piece about the Taliban leader boasting or promising or indicating that Afghanistan will be secure once the Taliban takes hold of this. Who is his audience for this, Tom, given the level of violence that Bill just illustrated and the threats to the people of Kabul? Who was he talking to? Good evening to you, Tom.
Good evening, John. Well, he's talking first and foremost to the people of Afghanistan, who he plans to rule over in the coming months. This message was distributed in a number of languages, not just in English on the main Taliban website, but also across the entire country of Afghanistan. And it was clearly the Habibullah Akhundzada, the emir of the Taliban, was, once again setting the stage for the return of the Islamic Emirate, which is the Taliban's totalitarian regime, which is supported by al-Qaeda and like-minded jihadists. And, the interesting thing about this, you pointed out, John, how Ashraf Ghani, the president of Afghanistan, was saying that the fate of Afghanistan is in the hands of Pakistan. And I think that is one of the many ways it points to an imbalance here. The Taliban, of course, has enjoyed the safe haven, safe harbor, facilitation and support of the Pakistani military intelligence establishment for many years. With the U.S. and NATO forces withdrawing from Afghanistan, the government of Afghanistan has no such regional sponsor, has no such backer to keep it going in the fight. Certainly none of the regional governments around it are going to prop it up against the Pakistani Taliban and al-Qaeda sort of onslaught, which is coming. And what's interesting about that, too, is that the Pakistani establishment has not made any real noises about rejecting Habibullah Akhundzada's right to rule over Afghanistan as the Taliban emir. So, the thing that Bill and I have documented for so many years, and that for some reason a lot of people in Washington can't get into their heads, is the Taliban isn't fighting for some sort of political reconciliation. They aren't fighting for some sort of political settlement or compromise with the Afghan government. They're fighting to rule, and this statement is just the latest example of that.
And when we look at Ghani looking to Pakistan, is he anticipating that Pakistan will in some way support him against the Taliban, which is a paradoxical, but is that why he is pointing to Pakistan? It's almost as if he doesn't want – as if he's blame-shifting already, as if he's already in retreat.
Yeah, I think it's an act of desperation. I think you see a series of acts of desperation here by both the U.S. and the Afghan government. I think when you go back to the history of how the Taliban took over Afghanistan in the 1990s, there's a wealth of evidence that the Pakistani, army and intelligence services played a very significant role in allowing the Taliban, and not just allowing, but actively supporting and helping the Taliban do that. And I think this is sort of a desperate cry for help by Ghani to basically the Pakistani establishment to try and keep the hounds on the leash here in the coming months. I don't think it's going to work. I don't think that's really what the Pakistani establishment has in mind. The bottom line is that they helped build this jihadi Frankenstein to take over territory and to win in Afghanistan again. I don't think they're going to do anything to put the brakes on that at this point.
I'm speaking to Tom Joslin and Bill Raggio. They are senior fellows at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. They keep the Long War Journal, this vast landscape. We're focusing on Afghanistan because these are the countdown days for the U.S. leaving its military footprint in Afghanistan, certainly turning over the Kandahar airfield to the Afghan National Army, is a significant change of the last 20 years. However, there is another player in Afghanistan now, not participating in peace talks, not lining up with the Taliban or anyone outside actors, to my knowledge. That's ISIS. And when we come back, that recent bombing of the school in Kabul that killed over 60 people, that was a school associated entirely with the Shia Hazara community of Afghanistan, a minority within Afghanistan. And the Taliban has said, we didn't do it. Who did it? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Bill Raggio and Tom Joslin, senior fellows at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. They keep the Long War Journal. And we're discussing the Taliban's conduct these last days of the U.S. deployment with its allies into Afghanistan. Certainly the Taliban fighters are advancing throughout the country. However, a recent horror incident in Kabul brings into the question of where is ISIS? And Bill, the reporting here is incomplete, but when we discussed this bombing on this school, it was guaranteed to make cause as many casualties as possible. It was a big VBIED outside. People gathered around it at the time when school was changing, boys and girls schools, and lots of children were killed. Many were injured, 60 dead so far, 150 injured. I've read that the Taliban has made it very clear they condemn this attack. It condemns this attack and was not responsible. That leaves one player, ISIS. The school is associated with the Shia Hazara community. That's a minority community in Afghanistan. Since then, the Hazaras are saying, we will be slaughtered when you leave. Is that your understanding, Bill? And is ISIS capable of launching that scale of mass murder?
Yeah, John. So interestingly, there was a bombing at a Hazara mosque in Kabul I believe it was yesterday. On Saturday, and the Islamic State claimed credit for that, but they did not claim credit for the bombing at the school. And, by the way, the casualties are approaching 90 killed and more than 150 wounded at this point in time. That hasn't been claimed. And look, the Islamic State they'll claim anything. They're desperate for press. And the fact that it hasn't been claimed really, you know, tells me that this very likely is either the Taliban or one of its allies. Al-Qaeda, which isn't openly claiming attacks like this at this time, or it could be a variety of other groups. That being said, look, the Taliban have no love for the Hazara as well. They've treated them badly over time. They've slaughtered them in the past. The Islamic State, I think the Taliban's sort of playing a long game when it comes to the sectarian violence. It's trying to not project that as its main focus, but I have no doubt they turned to it as soon as it was in their interest to do so. But as far as the Islamic State goes, you know, look, the United Nations within the last year has reported that there's a lot of belief that there's strong evidence that the Haqqani Network, which is a key component of the Taliban, has sponsored elements of the Islamic State to carry out attacks to provide implausibility. Plausibility for these attacks. The Taliban, they benefit from these type of attacks because it causes instability, but they don't want credit for it because they don't want to be perceived as being the bloodthirsty. So the Islamic State sort of acts like the dog on the leash. I give some credence to that. I think it certainly is a theory that I don't think that the Islamic State can operate in Kabul and in other areas without some form of Taliban assistance. The two are enemies. The Taliban eliminated their presence in Farah province, in Ghazni, and also in Nangarhar. However, the Islamic State really has nowhere else to go at this point. So I think they'll take the remaining relevant and they serve a purpose for the Taliban. I think that's what's happening. I could be wrong. But you know, again, the United Nations was putting this out, and I think that there's a lot of evidence, not evidence to back it up, but it makes a lot of sense.
Tom, Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, Al-Qaeda working closely with the Taliban. In fact, Taliban and Al-Qaeda go back and forth because they have major figures, the Haqqani network, that are both Taliban and Al-Qaeda. The question, however, is, does Al-Qaeda gain from having ISIS present? Is that something useful, or is that something they can't control?
Well, I think it depends on the scenario, John. I think in some areas where there's been infighting and ISIS has caused problems, in particular in eastern Afghanistan, which have long been Al-Qaeda strongholds, ISIS presence has caused problems for them at times. And you can even see in the Al-Qaeda literature that they talk about taking the fight to the ISIS groups there and wiping them out. Ironically enough, oftentimes with the de facto air cover of American forces, which is just goes to show how much of a tangled mess this whole war has become. But when it comes to mass casualty attacks in Kabul and elsewhere and that type of thing, the cutout theory of ISIS that the Haqqanis and then by extension Al-Qaeda would basically use ISIS to carry out deeds that they don't want to claim themselves, there is, as Bill said, some credence to that. You know, the UN officials and U.S. intelligence officials and some officials I've talked to have said that the evidence that they've collected includes intercepts of Haqqani commanders, sometimes dual-hatted Haqqani Al-Qaeda commanders, on the phone immediately before or communicating in various ways immediately before operations that are claimed by ISIS. And those communications indicate foreknowledge, that they know what's coming and that they know what's going to happen. And that's sort of the type of evidence that's been collected here. Now, obviously, Bill and I can't verify that for ourselves. We can't read that evidence for ourselves. But generally, when you have that type of intelligence, that sort of, it signals intelligence, it's hard to sort of wish that away.
The question of Al-Qaeda, they've maintained silence through this. Are they going to comment when the U.S. leaves, Tom? What do we know about their plans? We have about a minute.
So Al-Qaeda's already declared victory and said that the Taliban deal with the U.S. Is evidence that the Mujahideen, once again, were victorious. For the most part, they've adopted a policy called not standing out, which means they're not going to claim most of their operations and most of what they're doing. You know, years ago now, several years ago, for example, they managed a 30-square-mile training camp, probably the largest training facility in the history of the war, certainly, and yet there was never a single piece of propaganda, not a single image or video to come out of that camp. So that goes to show that they're basically trying to lay low and just keep quiet about all this. But they also do advertise a little bit what they're doing in a weekly newsletter known as Thabat, which is their weekly publication probably for donors. And Bill has documented that too, how they claim operations in there throughout all of Afghanistan.
Tom Joslin and Bill Raggio, they are senior fellows at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. They keep the Long War Journal, which is a chronicle of the vast canvas. However, now we're concentrating on Afghanistan and the countdown to the U.S. leaving Afghanistan to our understanding, leaving bases behind. The Afghan National Army now has the burden of dealing with the Taliban, the Pakistan Taliban, ISIS, wherever they are, and, of course, the mothership, Al-Qaeda. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.